Entrepreneur's relief is available where a disposal is made by a qualifying trust. The rules apply in a similar way as they do to a disposal by an individual. In order for an entrepreneur's relief claim to be made in respect of trust gains, the beneficiary must have an interest in possession in the trust. Fully discretionary trusts, therefore, will never be able to claim entrepreneur's relief. The disposal must either be of a business owned by the trustees but run by the beneficiary, either alone or in partnership, or, more likely, of shares in a qualifying company. The qualifying company must be the beneficiary's personal trading company, i.e. the beneficiary must have at least 5% of the shares, and the beneficiary must be an employee or officer of the company. Note, it is the beneficiary who must own at least 5% of the shares. The trustees have no minimum shareholding. The trustees and the beneficiary must make the claim for relief jointly, since it is the beneficiary's relief which is being utilised. This is important, as it means that the beneficiary's lifetime gains ceiling of £5 million is reduced by any gains for which entrepreneur's relief is given to the trustees. This is to prevent an individual doubling up his entrepreneur's relief by transferring assets to an interest in possession trust for his own benefit. In some instances, therefore, it may be in the beneficiary's interest not to consent to the trust's entrepreneur's relief claim. Where an IIP trust has more than one beneficiary with an entitlement to income, the gains eligible for entrepreneur's relief are apportioned. The apportionment is by reference to the qualifying beneficiary's proportional entitlement to the trust income. Next, we'll look at private residence relief available to trustees. If the trustees own a property, and under the terms of the settlement they permit one or more beneficiaries to occupy the property as their only or main residence, then private residence relief is available on a disposal of the property. Therefore, where a trust property is occupied by a beneficiary, the following periods of ownership will be exempt periods for the purposes of PPR relief. The period during which the property was occupied by the beneficiary, the last 36 months of ownership, and the deemed occupation periods in section 223, that is, A, periods of absence up to 3 years, B, periods of absence during which the beneficiary was abroad by reason of his or her employment, and C, periods of absence up to 4 years where the taxpayer was required to work elsewhere. Note that the deemed occupation periods in section 223 can only apply to trust gains where the same beneficiary occupied the trust property both before and after the period of absence. Where PPR relief is given on a trust gain, lettings relief will also be available in respect of periods during which the property was let to a third-party tenant. By way of illustration, the Miller Family Discretionary Trust bought an investment property in London for £100,000 in May 1989. The property was immediately let to an unconnected family on a three-year lease. Between May 1992 and May 1993, the property was renovated at a cost of £50,000. The property was unoccupied in this period. In May 1993, the trustees permitted Zoe, a beneficiary, to live in the property while she was at drama school in London. Zoe moved out in May 1995 to take up a two-year employment contract with a TV company in the north of England. The contract ended in May 1997, and Zoe returned to London to live in the trust property. The property had remained empty during this period. Zoe lived in the trust property for a further 3 years until she married and moved out in May 2000. The property was empty until May 2001, at which point it was let on a 12-month lease to an unconnected tenant. The tenant moved out in May 2002, after which the property remained empty until May 2003. In May 2003, another beneficiary, Claire, was permitted to occupy the property. Claire bought her own house in May 2006 and moved out. The property was then let again from May 2006 to a third-party tenant on a rolling lease until it was sold in May 2011 for £810,000 after expenses of disposal. We'll calculate the trustees' chargeable gain. The gain made by the trustees will qualify for PPR relief as the property had been occupied by a beneficiary as a private residence under the terms of the settlement. We therefore need to determine periods of occupation and periods of non-occupation. We'll call these periods of absence. Between May 1989 and May 1992, the property was let to a third-party tenant. As it was not occupied by a beneficiary, this is not a period of occupation for PPR purposes. Between 1992 and 1993, the property was empty due to refurbishment. Again, this is a period of absence. Between May 1993 and May 1995, the property was occupied by Zoe, a beneficiary. This counts as 2 years of trust occupation. Zoe then went to work somewhere else in the UK for 2 years, after which she came back and reoccupied the trust property. Therefore, the two-year period between May 1995 and May 1997 will count as a period of trust occupation under the deemed occupation rules in Section 223. This is because the same beneficiary, Zoe, occupied the property both before and after the period of absence. Zoe lived in the property for a further 3 years, giving 3 more years of trust occupation. Between May 2000 and May 2001, the property was empty. From May 2001 to May 2002, it was let to a third-party tenant. The property was then empty again for a further 12 months. Between May 2003 and May 2006, another beneficiary, Claire, occupied the property. After Claire moved out in May 2006, the property was then let to a third-party tenant until it was sold in May 2011. Therefore, the final 3 years of ownership between 2008 and 2011 will also count as deemed occupation. If we total these up, out of the 22 years of trust ownership, 13 years will qualify as occupation for PPR relief purposes. During the 9 years of absence, the property was let for 6 of those years. We can now calculate the chargeable gain. Sales proceeds are £810,000. The trustees bought the property for £100,000 and spent £50,000 on enhancement, giving a base cost of £150,000 and a gain, before PPR relief, of £660,000. 13 out of the 22 years of ownership will qualify as occupation. Therefore, the PPR relief is 13 over 22 multiplied by £660,000, giving £390,000. This reduces the gain to £270,000. As the property has qualified for PPR relief, and as the trustees had let the property during periods of absence, lettings relief is available. The lettings relief is the lower of the PPR relief, being £390,000, the gain arising in the let period, which is 6 years of the 22 years, giving £180,000, and the statutory maximum, which is £40,000. Lettings relief is therefore £40,000, reducing the chargeable gain to £230,000. Assuming the trustees had no other disposals in the year, they would deduct the annual exemption and charge the rest of this gain to CGT. As mentioned earlier in this lecture, it is not possible for the trustees to claim PPR relief if a gift of the property into the trust had been subject to a Section 260 gift relief claim. For example, assume a settlor gave a house to a discretionary trust and a Section 260 claim was made to roll over the gain on the property against the trustee's base cost. The trustees then permit a beneficiary to occupy the house as their main residence. On a disposal of the house by the trustees, PPR relief would not be available. Finally, in this session, there is an interaction between capital gains tax and inheritance tax when a disposal for CGT purposes results in inheritance tax being paid. This will be the case when a settlor gives assets to a discretionary trust, or when assets leave a discretionary trust and pass to a beneficiary such that an exit charge arises. Under Section 260, subsection 7, the inheritance tax paid on the transfer is an allowable deduction for the donee for capital gains tax purposes. Similar relief is available under Section 165, where a gift of business assets also proves to be a chargeable transfer for IHT purposes. For example, assume that an individual transferred an asset to an accumulation and maintenance trust in 2005, and as such made a potentially exempt transfer. The asset is a business asset, so the capital gain is deferred under Section 165. The transferor dies within 7 years of making the gift. Any inheritance tax on the failed pet will be paid by the trustees. Under Section 165, subsection 10, the inheritance tax payable by the trustees is an allowable deduction for capital gains tax purposes and thereby increases the trustees' CGT-based cost.